Yes, so I'm really excited to welcome my guest today, Tom Willis, originally from Devon in the UK, spent 3 years recruiting in London for Michael Page, and then transferred to LA, where he spent 5 years ultimately managing a business of 40 people, doing $9 million across 8 states on the West Coast, whilst also billing $600,000 or $700,000 himself. Fantastic. He recently launched the recruitment firm Placed, what a great name, backed by UK investor James Kahn. He's only 6.5 months into the business, but already has 5 recruiters and he's doing over $100,000 a month. So favorite movie, Wolf of Wall Street, fantastic. And he's been to Glastonbury 5 times and once saw Dolly Parton there. So welcome to the podcast, Tom Willis. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me along.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm really excited. You're so early in your journey on this business venture of yours, backed by James Kahn, who is basically, so he's sort of like an equivalent to one of the guys off the Shark Tank, like a Mark Cuban, isn't he? Because he's on the Shark Tank of the UK called Dragon's Den, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's very well known in the UK as a dragon or a shark here in the US, but probably not as well known here in the US.
Yeah, he's definitely not as well known in the US, but yeah, as you said, very well known in the UK. So he's backing your business. So obviously, you know what you're doing. So that's great news. Now, you landed in the US. Well, let's go back to the beginning. How did you get into recruitment, Tom?
I got into recruitment, like I would say probably 99% of people that I've interviewed over the years and just fell into it. Actually, my sister worked for Michael Page at the time and she worked in an office in Bristol, which is the southwest of the UK, as you well know. And I was applying it before recruitment. I was selling life insurance and I was looking for a new life insurance job. And I applied to a Michael Page job advert. And before you know it, what we call in the industry PRCing or potential recruitment consultant, I was going through an interview process at Michael Page and 8 years later found myself I guess as a career recruiter.
Yeah. I was selling advertising space when I found out a friend of mine was making about 3 times as much as me and managed to get an interview for a company back in the day in London called Hunter Skill. I was there for quite a long time. But yeah, I mean, have you ever met anybody who didn't fall into it? I mean, do people go to university these days going, I can't wait to leave university and become an agency recruiter?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, it was always when I was interviewing people for my team, if someone said to me they had a passion about getting into recruitment, that was an immediate red flag. Because I was like, why? You know, I've never met anyone who wanted to get into recruitment. You know, all the best recruiters say they fall into it. So
yeah. All recruiters fall into it. So, so then you came to the US, you spent a few years in the UK, obviously did very well over there. Then how did you get over to the US? Was that with Michael Page?
Yeah, it's a good story, actually. I was 3 years into my job in the UK and looking for, you know, what my next step might be. And I just so happened to be doing the kind of infamous San Francisco drive down to Los Angeles on a vacation one week. And I decided, as a sad person I am, to stop into the LA office in my stop in Los Angeles. And I met an English guy who ran the office for Michael Page there. And before you know it, we got chatting. We went out for some beers afterwards and, you know, sort of 3 or 4 beers deep, he was saying, man, you should move to LA. So I got into an interview process, into the formal interview process when I moved back to the UK or went back to the UK. And 3 weeks later, I had a job offer in my hand to transfer. And 3 months later, I had my visa in hand and moved to LA after only being there for a couple of days. So, so it's just, you know, it's one of those things where you just had a slight window in your life where everything kind of added up. I was single, I was living in a four-bedroom house in just outside of London and kind of figuring out what I wanted to do next. So timing worked perfectly.
That's brilliant. And are you still friends with that guy?
Oh, yeah. He runs an exec search firm now, recruiting in San Francisco, actually. But me and him chat every week. And when I lived in LA, he lived down the road from me and we always used to grab a beer.
Yeah. So brilliant. So you were there and you spent how many years there before you decided to start up your own?
So I spent 5 years there. I moved to Columbus, Ohio last October.
Like you do?
Yeah, like you do. And for people who don't know where that is, that's the middle of America, what they call the flyover states in the US. But met my wife in LA. She's an Ohioan and we decided to move after 5 years there to back to Columbus, Ohio. And that was part of the, to be honest, it was all part and parcel of the journey of, right, I'm going through the process of thinking about setting up a recruitment business. I probably wasn't going to do it in Southern California because of the heightened costs. Wanted to open a traditional recruitment business in a city where people would commute too easily. And I looked at Nashville, Columbus, Charlotte, Austin, Dallas, and ultimately for personal reasons and logistics reasons, chose Columbus.
Yeah, it makes sense. Move back to your wife's hometown. But why did you decide that it was time for you to start your own agency? I mean, you were working for Michael Page for years, doing really well.
Yeah.
What was the catalyst?
I think, I mean, from day one of moving to the US, when you've recruited in the UK market like you and I have, I think you come to the US and go, well, the market's unestablished. You know, in the UK, there's 26,000 recruiters or recruitment firms recruiting in a size of population of 60 million people. In the US, it's about the same number of recruitment firms, but obviously a population of 360 million people and, you know, whatever the workforce is within that. GDP is six times higher. The California market is the same size as the UK market. And you look at it and go, the salaries are a lot higher. The opportunity to make more money is so much higher than, you know, maybe starting up a recruitment business in the UK. So I always had it in the back of my mind to do it. But, you know, obviously had a good career at Michael Page, had to get the timing right. I had a lot of different conversations with a lot of different investors when I was going through the process of setting up a recruitment business. And I guess as a lot of people do, you know, you think about doing it yourself and setting up with you and your laptop, you look at investment and you look at the type of group that I've got into now. But it was certainly a 12-month process of me having discussions prior to making the leap. And even when I decided to make the leap, I was still, you know, loving my job and thinking, is it worth making the leap to do it myself?
So ultimately, why did you decide to go with the investor route instead of just, you know, cracking open your laptop and forming an LLC by yourself?
And I can speak better for it now in hindsight, 6 months in, because I think all the stuff that I thought would be true is kind of true. Originally going into it, I thought about, right, I'm probably not at the stage of my life where I want to go and set up a recruitment business on my own and have my laptop and kind of build a lifestyle business. Obviously, in an ideal world, I could scale it on my own and 100% of the business would be mine. But I thought the likelihood of being able to do that with the cash I had and kind of the plan I had, I would have probably ended up building a lifestyle business like I think 90% of people do when they start on their own.
So you mean just like an independent recruiting business?
Yeah, exactly. I think the stat is something like 95% of people don't get their business above 7 to 10 people or something like that. So it's, you know, really people run they're great businesses, but they run a small business making a lot of money for themselves. And what I wanted to do was really have the opportunity to try and build the business to 20, 30, 40, 50 desks. And I figured that having an investment partner that had been there and done it before may help me get there. So obviously within that, you get all the questions, and I had all the questions in advance, you know, why would you give up X amount of equity for that when you don't know what's going to happen and you're doing all the work? But regardless, I decided to do that. And down the line, you know, we're 6 months in, I'm already at 5 heads. If it's fully my own cash at this point, I don't think I'd have 5 heads. I think I'd be, okay, you know, we're doing well. We've just started to get a regular income of over 6 figures. And I would probably just continue to build profit. Whereas actually, because I've got the guys who want to scale the business and we've got a plan to not be profitable in the first couple of years, just to use that money to scale, it's making me scale faster. And that when I went into the building the company, that was my plan. I was like, right, I want to build a recruitment business. I'm going to need the help and the resources outside of recruiting to help me get there. And that's really what I'm getting.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier to spend other people's money, isn't it?
For sure. But it's also a lot easier to not overspend when you've got someone advising you who's been there and done it and made the mistakes before. So there are certain things, you know, I think it's easy to go and double down on technology.
So if it was your own money, you probably would have been reluctant to get to 5 people on board in such a short space of time.
Yeah, because you would look at it and go, well, you're in a situation at the moment where you can burn cash and you have advice on what sort of income you need to have and what sort of cash flow you need to have over a short period of time. Whereas I think if you're on your own, you go, well, I just need a bit more of a safety blanket. And I'd
probably
got to
make some profit first.
Yeah, I need 6 months of cash flow, or I need a year's worth of cash flow. I just think it would be a slower process.
Yeah. So you touched on it there, but what's your vision for the agency over the next sort of 3 to 5 years?
Well, the plan I put in place for the investment group is to get the business to 25 heads. 25 heads, $5 million, $1.5, $2 million worth of EBIT over the next 5 years. That would be kind of steady growth. I think, you know, obviously first 6 months has been good. I don't think we'll overdo it this year. I think we'll sort of stabilize at the five people and just get the profit moving now. But yeah, 25 people. And then the desire will be to, you know, maybe get another investment group or sort of sell part of the business and then scale it again. But we'll see. That's kind of the, you know, medium term plan, I would think.
Yeah. And when you say 25 heads, you mean 25 recruiters and salespeople?
Yeah, broadly, because the operations part of the business is kind of is done by the investment group.
Right. The back end is handled by them.
Yeah. So
all
maybe I'd have
billing, all the admin, what? Your ATS is sort of resides
ATS
with them.
Yeah, exactly.
LinkedIn recruiter licenses, everything's sort of plug and play.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be pretty cool. What ATS do you guys use?
Vincere, if I'm pronouncing that right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how to. Yeah. It's Vincere, V-I-N-C-E-R-E.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your market, because we haven't touched on that. You specialize, right?
We specialize specifically in construction. And two job types within construction, superintendents and project managers. We're super niche. We don't recruit anything outside of those jobs. And we only do, well, I started only doing Columbus, Ohio, but we've now got so many customers there that we ventured into a couple of other cities in the Midwest. But really, it's specifically in the Midwest. And then I hired a guy to build out kind of our Southwest territory where he started in Denver. And because of the nature of the construction industry, there's no remoteness in construction. It's all on site building stuff locally. So we're very much focused on kind of traditional recruitment, being local, meeting our candidates, meeting our clients.
You mean you can't lay bricks over Zoom yet?
Exactly. They can't. They haven't worked that one out. The drones or AI aren't doing that yet. So all local.
So superintendent, and you previously told me that a superintendent, which sounds like a police officer, but that's actually like a site manager, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in England, I think they'd call them site managers. But basically people who oversee the field workers. On site,
project managers and superintendents. Okay.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. Okay, so you picked your market. You got into the Columbus, Ohio market straight away. How did you intend? I mean, what was your vision for differentiating? It's not like the world needs another recruitment agency, is it? So what was your vision to differentiate your recruitment agency from everybody else? What were the sort of the pillars of this business going to be so that you could shout from the rooftops and say, no, you want to work with us?
And to be honest with you, I worked it out probably the second month in the business, in all honesty with you. When I first opened the doors, I thought, right, I'm just not going to recruit the West Coast because that was my old territory, my old company, and I'm going to recruit the East Coast. And so I started in New York.
What, because of non-competes?
Non-competes, but also, you know, even though the non-competes are a little bit loose in the US, but also, you know, I have a great relationship with my old business and figured I would just go and start net new. So it was amicably left, put it that way. So, yeah, so I decided to do New York because it's big and shiny. And I realized pretty quickly that Tom Willis on his own with his laptop was going to struggle in New York because firstly, it's super competitive for US recruitment. Secondly, it's driven down, the market rates are driven down dramatically to European rates, like 15 to 18%. I found out very quickly in the first month because of there's European recruiters recruiting in New York because of time zones. So, and I had no USP. I was just me turning up with me calling them. So we could have done okay there, but really there was no, why would I use Tom Willis type of thing? So very quickly, I decided to move into Columbus. I was slightly concerned to know whether there was really anyone would really work with me because it's a smaller city, but realized pretty quickly that I run a recruitment firm that's local. My sell is taking the traditional and putting it back into recruitment. I think people are spending companies are spending a lot of money on quick transactional fees and not getting a service for it. And I'm telling you, I'm going to come and meet you and meet the candidates I'm representing and try and take a little bit back of the old school recruitment. And before you know it, I started winning business locally, and I won some big contracts by saying, hey, you know, when was the last time you met a recruiter? And they said, never. And I'd be like, I'm at your office in 10 minutes. And some of these big customers that I never thought I'd win, they're some of my best clients now.
That's fantastic. And so when you say go old school, you mean get face to face, get people into Correct. The office. But you're a remote business, aren't you?
Yeah. And so originally that wasn't the plan as well. So, you know, what I've learned pretty quickly in the first 6 months of the business is the original plan was open an office and recruit major cities where we can make a lot of money and I could get bums on seats doing dials. But number one, the major cities, you don't really have a USP. And number two, I underestimated how hard it would be to get talent quickly in Columbus, in all honesty with you. Office prices were very similar to places I had looked at in other cities, even in LA. Salaries were a lot higher than I expected in Columbus. So I diversified pretty quickly and decided to hire people that I know or familiar with and search for the talent rather than base the business around the city I wanted to be in. And that was a change that we had to make kind of 2 or 3 months into the business.
Yeah. And so your USP at the moment in Columbus, Ohio is I'm right here on your doorstep. I can Great. Be around your office. It sounds like you're doing most of the BD. How are you getting that message out there? Are you just...
Yeah.
Talk to me about your business development
style. I think to start off with, it was very much that. You know, I would network with the candidates. I would start reaching out to local businesses saying, I'm a local recruiter. I'm representing these local candidates. Prospecting emails per se. And then just following it up. Tom Willis, local construction recruiter, based around the corner in Dublin, Ohio. Started working with X, Y, and Z, and I'm representing X, Y, and Z candidates. Who do you work with at the moment? When would you like to meet these candidates? When would you like to meet me? That type of thing. You know,
so really traditional MPC approach.
Totally
old. Just quality candidates. So you're getting permission from these candidates. They're good candidates, good construction site manager candidates, and then you're putting them in front. You're sending emails. So are you doing mass outreach? Are you following up by phone? Are you
not
dialing
so much?
First?
Yeah. Yeah, no, typically I'd reach out via email. With some sort of warmer, and typically it's a candidate. And then I would just follow up and introduce myself and say, hey, I represent these types of candidates. And it gets easier and easier because I can start saying, I work with X company locally. And every intro email now has the top five companies in Columbus that are the top five general contractors here because I work with them all already. And I say, I work with these five companies. I'm representing this candidate with those people, and this candidate would be interested in speaking with you. Here's a summary of their experience, and then I just call them. It's the same as when everyone else sends out a marketing type of email. Your response rate's low, and you get a better response rate if you follow it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's got really tough in the tech business to do that these days because it's overpopulated with recruiters anyway. And obviously, you know, the markets have taken a bit of a kick in the teeth over the last sort of year or 18 months. But in your markets, in your construction markets, your clients, are they quite happy to pick up the phone and have a conversation with somebody they've never spoken to before?
Relatively. I mean, I think you get the same type of coldish response that you get from anyone who receives a cold call initially. So you just have to add value really, really quickly.
Are they surprised that you're a Brit?
It does. I have a British accent and LA phone number cold calling people in Columbus, Ohio. So that totally throws him off.
But that's actually, it's quite a nice intro, isn't it? Because everybody's got a story about the UK and
all the time.
It's always been quite nice to be a Brit in America because people seem to resonate with us a lot.
I think unfairly, we get a slight advantage. But it's funny you say that because when I first moved to California, I was recruiting in the tech space. And no doubt, you know, I've got old colleagues in that space now and the market was a lot better than it is at the moment. But it was much harder to do the kind of traditional switchboard calling because whatever, they have AI bots that block it or Google, etc. But there's much more of a senior candidate relationship market because much more of the senior candidates move around in tech. So you could do that kind of old school recruitment in tech tech where you can flip the senior candidates, whereas the or build relationships with the senior candidates rather than in construction, the senior guys typically work their way up and don't move. So that was one kind of transition I had to make when I moved industries. It was much more going back to the cold calling and doing pure business development rather than building relationships with senior candidates and hoping that they work with you when they're in a hiring capacity.
Right, because it just takes a lot longer for them to move up the chain.
Yeah.
Because that's a classic way of building business, but it's still time consuming in all markets.
Totally. Yeah.
Because it 100%. Takes a while for people to get promoted. But yeah, candidate today, client tomorrow, and vice versa. That's always been the case.
Exactly.
Some of the best business I've ever won has been from people who I've tried to headhunt, who turned around and say, "Well, I don't want, or I'm not 100%. Interested in that role, but I'd love to talk to you about how you could help me." I'm like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah.
So that's really cool. So what's been your strategy for hiring recruiters? What are you looking for when you're talking to recruiters? Is there a special set of skills and attributes that you're looking for? Must they have construction experience and recruitment experience? You know, what does that look like?
No, I think especially now in my current business, I mean, previously at my old firm, you know, we would certainly look for, if we were to take people from a competitor, we'd certainly look for people from a direct competitor that was doing the market, so they were plug and play. But I was kind of built in a world where you hire salespeople and you train salespeople to build recruiters and kind of teach them our way. Now the investment firm that I have is kind of, they've helped me kind of take a different view of experienced recruiters. I'd never traditionally hire experienced recruiters externally. So now I look for experienced recruiters, probably 360, because I'm a small business, still people need people to generate business. Don't really mind about the industry. I've always kind of said to people, and if I meet people who have a specific passion about recruiting a specific industry because they like what they recruit, I'm kind of like, well, do you like making money or do you like the industry that you recruit in? Because if you like making money, you can make a lot of money in construction. And I try and look at it that way. So experience, fine. We all know what a good recruiter looks like. I try and attract those people. As we know, it's very, very difficult to attract really good recruiters out of their current seats. And then after that, it's all about culture. You know, it's 50% culture, especially as now I'm building a recruitment business. It's like, what journey do they want to go on in the next 3, 4, 5 years? Because ultimately, let's be honest, you know, I'm a 5-person recruitment business and it's Tom Willis and his laptop and I've got 4 other people around me. You know, we've got startup style benefits and we've got startup style infrastructure. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm not selling anything per se right now. I'm kind of selling a dream, really. And where do people want to go with on their journey? And do they want to be part of that growth on the journey? So I look at kind of people who are kind of a little bit risk averse, got a bit of like, they're in between, you know, where they want to be in their current firm and maybe what they want to do next. You know, if they want to go to a boutique, what do they want out of the boutique? Like if they want to go and join a big brand, then I'm not for them. So that.
And I think a lot of people who do work for big brands, you know, the Robert Half's of the world.
Yeah.
I think at some point the idea, what you have to sell of working for a boutique company where, you know, you've kind of got a seat at the top table, you're sitting next to the owner of the company. It's a completely different kind of vibe when you're working for a much smaller company. And I think a lot of people really enjoy it after they've spent a couple of years cutting their teeth at something like a Robert Half or a K-Force. And so I think you have got something to sell there because it's like, you know, come and join me and, you know, help me figure this out together and you'll have a ton of autonomy. And I promise I'm not going to like manage metrics to the point where you're going to have a headache every Friday afternoon looking to meet those metrics. And we'll get onto metrics in a minute. But yeah, that's interesting that you recruit people. You're not worried about the industry. You do prefer recruitment experience. Have you ever hired somebody just with sales experience but no recruiting experience?
Not into my current firm. No. But previously, it was 95% of that. You know, I hire people from tech. I hire people from logistics. I hire people from, you know, people who've just sold product, etc., who wanted to try something a bit different. It was an easy sale to product environments because the margins are so low in those environments that the margins are much higher in recruitment, so they can earn so much more money. But I wouldn't do it now just at the moment because really there is a big difference when you bring someone in who's bought into all the other bits and they know the fundamentals. You don't have to teach them things like scrolling through LinkedIn, etc.
When you say culture, you know, you're 50% of what you're selling is culture. Can you sort of expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and we had this problem in my prior company as the world became more remote, was you can work for anyone. remote broadly in our industry or in a sales type of job. But then it's then what does the badge really mean? You know, why do you work for Placed? Why do you work for X recruitment firm if you just sit at home in Columbus, Ohio and don't have day-to-day engagement with your colleagues? So I think the key part is that I'm trying to really focus on is when I hire X person, will they work well with this person? And will we create a group of people that really want to work together, even though it is virtual? And then when something shinier comes along, they look at it and go, well, actually, there's a view, you know, I like my job, I like my company, I like the people I work with. There's a value to that rather than me going and just trying to chase more money or whatever it might be. So I'm really, and to be honest, it's a personal desire, to be honest, because recruitment for me, and I think we had this chat when we first connected, is, you know, back in the day, it used to be going into the office, see the people I work with, have a bit of fun, etc. And the world's moved on from that a little bit, but we can try and still build that through hiring the right types of people that want to work together and fit.
Yeah. I mean, I think building a remote culture is tough. I think lots of people talk a good game, and agency recruiters are almost by definition extremely social people, aren't they?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's, I cut my teeth, you know, back in London, going into the office every day, going to the pub most lunchtimes and evenings with all my colleagues. And that's the way that we roll over there.
Yeah.
I mean, are you afraid at all that the remote culture might bite you in the bum, or?
Well, what I'm afraid of actually is how scalable is a remote business. You know,
yeah.
Can you build a fully remote recruitment business to 100 people?
Yeah.
And then still have that connectivity? That is definitely one question I have.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the culture of making phone calls? Because I think over the last few years, and both on agency recruitment and internal recruitment, there's a lot of companies out there, there's a lot of vendors, digital vendors, platforms, et cetera, who try and tempt you into believing that you could do this job just via email and via messaging, et cetera, and mass outreach. How hard is it to find people who are willing just to get on the phone and go old school?
It is hard.
Yeah.
You know, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier as well. I think, you know, as you become a more mature recruiter and experienced in the space, you probably want to work yourself away from working in an environment where someone's sending you your KPIs every day. And really, what I want to try and create is a environment that has, you know, it uses KPIs for people to kind of go, right, I know what equals X amount of dollars. I know that information.
Yeah.
So whether I choose to do that is up to me. If I choose to do double, I make double the money. If I choose to do half, I make half the money. That's the kind of environment you want to create. The challenge that comes is when people don't do the right level of activity, and then you're left in a place where they're costing you money, and then you go, well, I'm going to have to shift into driving KPIs, otherwise you won't have a job.
That's funny you should say that, because I built this, I consult with some owners of agencies, and I built this spreadsheet called Success Metrics. I called it Success Metrics. And it's basically a way of reverse engineering out of the amount of revenue that you want to generate through permanent or contract placements. And you reverse engineer the activity.
Yeah,
approximately using traditional or historical, not traditional, historical recruiting ratios that actually line up with that kind of success. And you can sort of reverse engineer out of that number all the way back down to sort of, you know, how many people are you going to need to reach out to? How many resumes are you going to have to submit? How many interviews are you going to need to score on a weekly basis, etc.? And so it's not perfect. It's not a perfect science.
No.
But I think your point, and I agree with this, is that it's better to use metrics to show people the way, to shine a light and say, look, if you were to do this, this is how much you would earn. Or if this is how much you want to earn, this is pretty much historically what we've proven to be right in terms of activity and production. And that's a better way of helping people use metrics, rather than if you don't meet these metrics, we'll be having a very different conversation next week or next month. And it's less educational and much more stressful. And I think it forces bad behavior as well.
I agree. I was listening to your last podcast, and the lady said exactly the same. You know, if you're at a point where you're driving KPIs and people are doing KPIs for KPIs' sake, KPIs have gone the wrong direction. If people are using the metrics to go, right, I know last week I only booked 2 interviews, so this week I need to book 4 interviews, otherwise I won't be on track to make $20,000 this month. Finally, 6 months in, I now have metrics-ish, you know, and they're driven down by different things. But I now have metrics-ish where I can go, look, I know if you don't book 7 interviews this month, you will not make 1 placement. And therefore, if you book 14 interviews this month, you'll make 2 placements, et cetera, within reason.
And those numbers can vary depending upon the relationship you have with your client, whether it's a contingency deal or whether it's retained or
industry
contained.
But
the metrics that interest me are, you know, how many first round interviews have you scored this week or arranged this week? Not second or third. How many first round interviews have you scored this week? And what's the value of your desk if every single deal where you have at least one person interviewing closed today? What's that numerical value, that dollar value? And that's very telling as well. And at the end of the day, it's up to people how many times they pick up the phone. You can't teach hunger, Tom, right? You can't. You can shine a light and say, if you do this, you will get that. But even saying that, there is a very serious quality aspect to what we do. Okay. And it's not all about crunching the numbers, is it? There's a lot of nuance in our business as well, in terms of the way we connect with people, the questions we ask. How are you dealing with that? When you bring people on board, it's not just there's a desk and there's a phone or the remote equivalent of that, but how are you sort of teaching people the nuances and the subtleties of the way we ask questions, the way we build relationships, the way we reach out to people, to distance yourself from some of the more transactional recruiters?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I think the candidate stuff's much easier because it's much more attainable to identify what a quality candidate looks like and therefore maybe what information we should be having and what value we can add to that conversation in advance. So if a recruiter comes to me and says, hey, I'm not comfortable with X job or how to position the conversation to this person, you know, I can have a quick look at the background and say, well, I think you can add X, Y, and Z value from this conversation. And I think these are two companies we've not worked with. It would be good for you to do some digging in to some of these backgrounds so we can understand a little bit more about this company. So I think that's a much more tangible avenue from the candidate perspective. The client side is a little bit more challenging, and we're having an ongoing discussion about this at the moment because ultimately the client conversations is a two-way conversation. So it's almost the value you add creates a better relationship, but there has to be a platform for you to be able to receive or be able to give that advice or add that value. And so much of the time, and even I have it now, where there's clients I work with at the moment where I struggle to get them on the phone. Yeah, I cannot get them on the phone. So how do you add that value? How do you get them on the phone? So I think we have to, like, with the jobs and the recruiters that we have in the team, we have to ask them, like, you know, what is your relationship like? What's their communication like with you? So then what are our opportunities to try and add a bit more value, understand the job a bit better, get this process moving. And there's some we've just got to accept that they want a transactional relationship with you and you give them a bit of a transactional relationship.
Yeah, I mean, the hard part in recruitment, in agency recruitment these days, is just getting that initial phone call scheduled or catching somebody and just proving to them that you're a decent human being. I think, you know, once a good recruiter gets a prospect on the phone, they usually do a pretty good job of warming up that phone call and building some rapport and asking some intelligent questions. But it's just become very hard because clients in general are so used to being called and emailed all day, every day by recruiters all over the country. And I think a lot of people are just saying no to it now. How are you fighting your way through that? I mean, are you just staying consistent and getting after people like time and time again, or are you like developing content and sharing content and value and trying to distance yourself that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 10 ways to do a business development call, but I think when you're in the infancy of your business, there's nothing stronger than, I guess, just walking in with a product and having the product, having the good quality product. That really gets you through the door. What you do after that is about the follow-up. It's just about the hustle. I find that the people that really aren't getting those conversations, it's just like, how many touch points have we had? You know, the classic stuff, like, have you texted this person? Have you emailed this person? You know, have we tried sending them a different candidate and following up on that? You know, have we swung by their office and just seen if they're around and just asked them if they like the look of the person that we sent them and made a quick introduction? Just the really traditional
That's
stuff.
Really old school.
And 100%. And that's what I was trying to really, really hammer home, because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
How many recruiters are just popping in someone's office right now? I get it within different industries and it might not be applicable, but if you recruit engineering, you recruit production, you recruit office space work, it's, you can do it.
You can, but back to what we were saying earlier, it's very hard to find people who are willing to do that, who have the resilience in place. I mean, I think you can teach it, but it's extremely hard. I mean, those door-to-door salespeople, I mean, that's probably the highest turnover of any business in the world. And it's very hard to find those people. It's very hard to train people to do that. But no doubt it can be done. And, I've heard of all sorts of tactics, from delivering their favorite Starbucks to breakfast burritos or crumble cookies or whatever, and saying, all that kind of stuff, just to get to put your face in front of a prospect client. But I'm glad to hear that you are going old school, because I think that's where the opportunity lies.
I will say I did have a warm response from an event I organized for HR people. I did something for talent acquisition and HR, which was organizing a breakfast event, and actually got them to the event.
So TA people in the construction industry at prospect clients.
Yeah, just something a little bit softer, and I had someone do a talk about psychological profiling and how to put that into your culture. Just something a bit more value add.
That's
but
nice.
To be honest, but to be honest with you, I still get a better response from just doing the other stuff. So I try.
And are the TA people inside the clients that you want to sort of penetrate, are they friendly towards you, or do they see you sort of as a competitor?
Definitely not the competition, but I think, they get absolutely hammered by recruiters, like most TA HR types of people do. So you've got to kind of just do, again, the old school stuff, which is work with them to have the relationship with them that allows you the relationship with the line manager. Because a lot less people are peppering the line managers. As we all know, if HR have five different functions to manage, they're getting tackled by finance recruiters, construction recruiters, business development recruiters, etc. VP.
So you're looking for a champion inside the business who can then go back to TA and say, hey, I'd really like to work with Tom Willis and his crew.
Exactly. Go round them, but don't go round them to mess up the process. Go round them to try and figure out what the best way is to work within the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, there's 10 different ways of doing this. And I think befriending TA directors and TA managers is a very good idea, because they are ultimately the gatekeeper of those relationships. But finding a champion is the traditional way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the next 6 months going to look like, and what kind of challenges are you currently facing to get to the next level? So you're at five heads, five people on board, next stop, 10 people. How soon are you going to get to 10 people, and what's preventing you from doing that?
So I think we'll be at 10 people by end of Q1 next year. I do. We've got enough business for it. We've already got enough business for it. I think the biggest challenge, it's funny we talk about people getting peppered, because I as a founder, as a hiring manager now, I obviously get peppered by or approached by other services. And I always think about the value that these people are trying to add to me. And the reality is I don't get very many cold calls. I just get lots of cold emails because they don't know really what I
mean.
I want.
Does your inbox, your LinkedIn inbox, look like?
Because
it's incredible how many people are reaching out trying to sell something, and most of the messages are just, they're poor.
Rubbish. And actually the real challenge I have is we can't generate enough candidates. We can't generate enough candidates fast enough. If we could, we would be making way more money. I think it's primarily down to just the fact that five people can only do a certain amount of reach out. So then what's the solution? Add more heads, generate more candidates, obviously more cost. Try and find a low-cost solution. We all trial the RPO stuff, the outsourcing stuff. Trial AI, the amount of AI emails I get. Then, I've sat on a few demos and still there's no solution. So the big firms do well because ultimately the amount of, my business at Michael Page used to generate 300 candidates a week. That's 1,200 candidates a month. I mean, to beat that, you've got to be doing some serious recruitment right. So for us to scale, we need to try and find easier, quicker, better tools to generate candidates in maybe a slightly untraditional way, whether that's using other partner agencies, whether that's using outsourcing, or whether that's using a candidate generating technology.
Are you using stuff like sequencing technology?
I would say badly, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as traditionally we do in recruitment, you know, I think we could pay for more technology and use that technology. But as you well know from starting a business, like I overnight could spend $60,000 on different types of tech trying to figure out which one works. And then you always ask yourself, well, shall I just double down on in LinkedIn and Indeed and just spend that money on LinkedIn and Indeed to try and give myself more avenues to generate?
Is it a question of finding these people or reaching them? Do you know where to find them, but you just can't reach them, or is it you can't find them?
I think it's reaching them.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's reaching them and having
a consistent, it's a solvable problem. It's a solvable problem, and then the solution exists somewhere between something which is very, very scalable, but something that's also hyper personalized, and you have to figure that bit out, because today, like you've just said, and I repeated it as well, everyone's sick of receiving messages from people they don't know. Telling them, you know, Marcus, I just wanted to get 10 minutes of your time because of X, Y, and Z. I don't care what you want if I don't know you. You've got to do better than that in a message. You've got to be extremely relevant. You've got to be hyper-personal. I've got to believe that that message was specifically written to me, Marcus Edwards. And so that's a challenge as well, which I know AI is trying to solve, but I think that's unethical. And so it's an interesting but solvable problem, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about it more offline.
Agreed.
Good stuff. Hey, listen, it's been a ton of fun having this conversation, and congratulations to you getting placed off the ground so quickly. 6.5 months, already 5 people, over 100k a month. Brilliant stuff. I think this is going to give a lot of people some real enthusiasm for maybe going out and doing the same thing. So thank you, Tom Willis, for coming along to Recruiting Trailblazers today. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll talk again very soon.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Bye.